Hello, hello. This is Charlene.
This is Madeline.
And we're here to talk to you about Chapter 14, Urbanization and Rural Communities, and Chapter 15, Population and the Environment. The social issues in these chapters are that the worldwide population is declining. Many think that it is due to worldwide hunger and poverty, yet it is solely because of the lack of resources and the difference of civilization between pre-industrial and industrial nations. We are also going to see that some problems are worse in cities precisely because they are cities and therefore crowded with traffic and many buildings and people. We're also going to take a look at the problems our community faces in rural areas precisely because they are rural and therefore isolated with long distances to travel.
For historical events, one of the most significant changes over the centuries have been urbanization, or the shift from rural areas to large cities. It's basically the process by which towns and cities are formed and become larger. More people begin living and working in central areas, and the ways in which each society adapts to this change. Urbanization has had important consequences for many aspects of social, political, and economic life. The earliest cities developed in ancient times after the rise of horticultural and pastoral societies made it possible for people to stay in one place instead of having to move around to find food. Because ancient cities had no sanitation facilities, people typically left their garbage and human waste in the city streets or just outside the city wall. This poor sanitation led to disease and high death rates. Some cities eventually developed better sanitation procedures, including a sewer system. Still, the world remained largely rural until the industrialization of the 19th century. U.S. cities became more numerous and much larger during the 19th century because of two trends. The first was immigration. Immigration is an essential concept to population. Immigrants such as Mexicans, Chinese, and the Irish came to the U.S. for a better life opportunity and to escape the hardships in their home country, only to find more in America. The whites were not happy when each of these different communities migrated to the U.S. because they feared they were taking their jobs. Serious threats were given to these immigrants in hopes of them leaving. These immigrants faced discrimination and attacks. The second trend that led to the U.S. cities becoming more numerous was industrialization, and people moved to live near factories and other cities of industrial production. Many immigrants faced hostility. Others stayed and had children that were born in the U.S. because these children of the immigrants are U.S. citizens. These families stayed in America and contributed to a great amount of labor and economic factors. According to the textbook, if all unauthorized immigrants were to return to their homeland, 2.8 million jobs would be lost and $245 billion in gross domestic product would be lost as well. These immigrants have done a lot for America, especially in the labor part of the economy. They do most jobs that American citizens look down on and would never do. They have contributed a lot to help this economy.
Hey guys, here's a fun fact. Half of the Earth's inhabitants now live in towns and cities. To give you an idea of how quickly this happened, consider up to the following. Up to 2014, the world was adding almost 50 million urban dwellers per year. That's the same as adding the current entire metropolitan areas of New York, London, Paris, Rome, and Berlin every year. The United States is a heavily urbanized society, where it was largely rural society just a century ago. The population in San Bernardino County a century ago was 20,000, and now the population in the IE is roughly 200,000. In the Inland Empire has seen so much growth since the end of the 19th century. The IE used to be a major center for agriculture, including citrus, dairy, and winemaking. However, agricultural declined in the 20th century, and since the 70s, has had a rapid growth of population fed by the families in search of affordable housing. This quest for affordable housing led to more industry. The region experienced significant economic growth and population growth through most of the latter half of the 20th century. In the early 1990s, the closing of Norton Air Force Base in 94 resulted in the loss of 10,000 military and civilian jobs and sent San Bernardino's economy into a downturn. The region as a whole had partially recovered from this downturn by the start of the 21st century through the development of warehousing like Amazon, shipping like FedEx, logistics, and retail. Check this out. A report prepared for the Southern California Association of Governments showed that San Bernardino County and Riverside counties have created nearly 350,000 jobs since the economy recovery in 2011. That's like the equivalent of giving every person that lives in Anaheim a job. That's pretty incredible. And these are good jobs too. These jobs largely concentrate on the region's core industries of logistics, healthcare, and construction. One significant shift is the growth in professional, management, and scientific employment sector. These increase in workers with college degrees and higher demand for professional service providers in the IE strengthening economy. So stay in school, people. The IE's continued growth is largely dependent on five sectors, which has competitive advantage: logistics, healthcare, manufacturing, and construction. Reports project construction to be one of the largest contributors to economic growth moving forward, driven by an increase in demand for housing in a region that is significantly more affordable than the rest of Southern California. Housing prices of, say, a house costs $277,000 in the Inland Empire. That same house would cost $450,000 in Los Angeles and nearly $600,000 in the Orange County. Those are powerful numbers, and they will force growth into this area. And as families move here, they bring their education, their skills, their income, and their spending. Southern California is one of the fastest growing population and economic centers in the world, and the decisions we make now will impact us for generations to come.
In the institutional and structural outcomes of inequality and impact on life changes, from a functionalist perspective, cities serve many important functions for this society, but also have their dysfunctions. Functionalist theorists differ on the relative merits and disadvantages of urban life, and in particular on the degree to which a sense of community and social bonding exists within cities. A basic debate within the functionalist perspective centers on the relative merits of cities and urbanization, asks that in what ways and to what extent are cities useful or functional for society, and in what ways and to what extent are cities harmful and dysfunctional for society. Put more simply, are cities good or bad? There is no one answer to this question because cities are too complex for a simple answer. Cities are both good and bad. They are sites of creativity, high culture, population diversity, and excitement, but they are also sites of crime and other problems. The conflict theory's perspective is that cities are run by political and economic elites that use their resources to enrich their positions and take resources from the poor and people of color. The diversity of social backgrounds found in cities contribute to conflict over norms and values. Conflict theory assumes a basic conflict between society's haves and have-nots, or between the economic and political elites and the poor and the people of color. This type of conflict, says conflict theory, manifests itself especially in the nation's cities, in which the haves and have-nots live very different lives. On the other hand, the rich in American cities live in luxurious apartments and work in high-rise corporate buildings, and they dine at the finest restaurants and shop at the most expensive stores. On the other hand, the poor and people of color live in dilapidated housing and can often barely make ends meet. 1 billion people live in urban slums, which are typically overcrowded, polluted, and dangerous, and lack basic services such as clean water and sanitation. Conflict theorists add that the rapid urbanization of poor nations has compounded the many problems these nations already have, just as the rapid urbanization in the industrial world more than a century ago led to the disease and violence. As cities grow rapidly in poor nations, moreover, These nations' poverty make them ill-equipped to meet the challenges of urbanization. From the symbolic interactionist view, city residents differ in their types of interaction and perceptions of urban life. Cities are not chaotic places, but rather locations in which strong norms and values exist. Consistent with the overall approach of symbolic interactionism, scholars of the city who take this approach focus on the nature of urban residents' interaction with each other, the reasons for this, their pattern of interaction, and their perceptions of various aspects of urban life.
Okay, so I'm here to talk to you about current and pop culture. Cities have always been the connection of prosperity, job creation, and poverty reduction. Many people relocate to cities from rural areas in search of a better job opportunity and access to services, such as healthcare and education. In theory, jobs have created in cities. When firms are located closer to other firms, the market thrives and potential clients are much more easily accessible. Not only that, productivity increases, revenues come in, and new jobs are created. There are five types of city residents. Cosmopolitans. These are people who live in the city because of cultural attractions, restaurants, and other features of the best that the city has to offer. Cosmopolitans include students, writers, musicians, and intellectuals. Unmarried and childless individuals and couples are the second type. They live in a city to be nearby their jobs and enjoy the various kinds of entertainment found in the cities. These people add balance to the sociological perspective of overpopulation, perhaps because in industrial cities, women have lower fertility rates and are not producing as much. The decline in the fertility rates are much due to the various contraceptives and methods and how women in today's society do not view family or children as much as traditional values as before. The third type is ethnic villagers. They're recent immigrants and members of various ethnic groups who live amongst each other in certain neighborhoods. These neighborhoods tend to have strong social bonds and more generally a strong sense of community. In contrast to the final two types of residents find in the city alienating and experience a low quality of life. These are people with low levels of formal education who live in poverty or near poverty and are unemployed or underemployed and work at a very low wage. They live in neighborhoods filled with trash, broken windows, and other signs of disorder. They commit high rates of crime and also have high rates of victimization by crime. The final type is the trapped. These are residents who, as their name implies, might wish to leave their neighborhoods, but they are unable to do so for several reasons. They may be alcoholics or drug addicts. They may be elderly or disabled, or they may be jobless and cannot afford to move to a better area. On the one hand, many U.S. cities are vibrant places filled with museums and other cultural attractions, nightclubs, theaters, restaurants, public transportations, buses, subways, and light rails, and populated by the people from many walks of life and from varied racial and ethnic and national backgrounds. Many college graduates flock to cities, not only for their employment opportunities, but also for their many activities and the sheer excitement of living in metropolis. On the other hand, many U.S. cities are also filled with abject poverty, filthy and dilapidated housing, high crime rates, traffic gridlock, and dirty air. Many Americans would like to live nowhere but a city, and many Americans would like to live anywhere but a city. Cities arouse a strong opinions, pros and cons, because there are many things that both to like and to dislike about the city.
Here are some questions that you guys can think about. The social constructionist view raises an interesting question. When is a social problem a social problem? According to some sociologists who adopt this view, negative conditions and behaviors are not a social problem unless they are recognized as such by policymakers, large numbers of lay citizens, or other segments of our society. Industrialization has led to jobs and a better quality of life, with all maintaining affordable housing in the Inland Empire. So is this boom really even creating a social problem?
As we all know, a social problem is any condition or behavior that has negative consequences for a large number of people, and that is generally recognized as a condition that needs to be addressed. But how can bringing jobs, better education, and resources to an otherwise desolate area be a problem?
Why do you think people who live in the industrial nations are having a low rate in children?
In closing, just remember, there must be a perception that a condition or behavior needs to be addressed for it to be considered a social problem. Overpopulation is balanced out by the couples who choose to be childless, and rural areas are balanced out with industrialization. The only social problem therein lies with the minor carbon footprint left behind by the increase in population to the industrialized areas. Immigration and crowded cities don't outweigh the benefits of industry. Industrialization is not considered a social problem because living without resources would cause many more social problems.
For references to this podcast, see the Dropbox.